City Current. Produced by Dakota Media Access. In-depth discussion with Bismarck and Mandan city officials. Watch on Government Access Channel 602 HD or tune in to Radio Access 102.5 FM. Always local, always current.
Welcome to City Current. It's Thursday, April 25th, and we are here in the studios at Dakota Media Access, the we being Jason Timonic from the city of Bismarck.
Greetings, Mary.
And I'm Mary Van Sickle. And good to see you, too. We were scheduled to do City Current and our usual Wednesday yesterday, but there was a little disruption.
Some activity downtown yesterday.
In our with our neighbors at Starian Bank, and thank goodness everybody's okay and nothing
turned out.
Nothing bad happened. Yes. Yeah. But it was a bit of a disruption, as they say, to the day around here. I am not entirely sure, but I think besides Starian Bank, we were the only ones, I believe, that had to evacuate their buildings, which we went. So we were out on the street for about 5-6 hours yesterday. It was very interesting to watch, but certainly gave us confidence in the Bismarck Police Department and
Law Enforcement,
Sheriff's Department.
SWAT, everybody. Yeah,
they did a great job. A plethora of law enforcement in the area, and they had it pretty really well contained. Mm-hmm. So we appreciate that. It was, again,
a little unnerving, though.
Disruption to the day, and certainly disruptive to Starian Bank. That's not something I'm sure they'd like to experience either. So,
and I appreciate your flexibility, for this program. I think this is an important program that we're able to do, and I'm glad that your staff is able to adjust to the extra day in between. But
you're welcome.
We'll get through this one, too.
We think it's important, too.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
This comes on the heels of the meeting on Tuesday night. This Bismarck City Commission meeting was another almost record breaker. I believe we were just about 5 hours long.
Yep, just under.
Yeah. So we notice. Yeah. We notice that. And just to remind people that the meetings will replay on the cable channel, the government channels, in their time slots, but it does take a little longer for us to get it online in the archive.
Yep.
So because there's some transcoding and all sorts of technical things that I can't explain, but that takes some time, especially again on a 5-hour meeting. Mm-hmm. So we're close to getting that online, and people can watch it in its entirety with all the chaptering, so you can jump to agenda items. That's a feature that people like, and that's why it takes a little bit longer. So,
no, I think it's good that people understand that a long meeting takes a little longer to do the tech stuff, but it will be there. We appreciate that it's there, and I know lots of people will go find this information at their convenience.
It was a big meeting. There was a lot of agenda items and a lot of different things covered. A consent agenda, there was one item pulled out of consent for discussion, and that had to do with the Main Avenue conversion to three lanes.
Right.
It's already three lanes, but this would be the more of the permanent markings.
The permanent implementation, the permanent traffic signal changes and things like that.
Yeah.
So the project came in a little higher than the original engineer's estimate, and some of the funding was just a little bit short, so the commission wanted to talk about funding alternatives. The city engineer, Gabe Schell, had a recommendation to use a fund that is it's generically called the Rural Roads Fund, and it's intended to support projects that are just that, rural roads that need upgrades and things. But in this case, it would be an alternate funding source, and there were, at least at the time, no projects identified for those particular funds. But the commission would like to just take a step back, make sure that there aren't any other projects that would be unintentionally compromised through the use of the rural road funds. So we'll see this one come back at the May 14th meeting.
And as I understood, that the reason that the bids came in a bit higher was that the original intention was to use the existing traffic
Signal arms and everything
for the new features, and it was discovered through the design process, the engineering process, that these traffic signal arms are just not equipped any longer to handle any more
they're not adequate for the new signal heads and some of those things.
So that was what resulted in a bit higher bids. So, but just to review this area, now we're talking, and we can pop up a map here, that this three-lane conversion, again, it's already in place, but this permanent implementation and the features that you'll see will be just slightly west of Washington, or excuse me, on Main Avenue, just slightly west of Washington Street here is where it starts to
As it transitions from 40 miles an hour to 25 miles an hour, then it it narrows down into that the three-lane configuration. It will travel east along Main Avenue all the way through 7th Street, and then between 7th and 9th, it would retransition back to two lanes in both directions with the center turn lane.
Okay.
So we're really talking about the heart of downtown, the corridor that is most commonly used by pedestrians and vehicles.
I think, again, people are pretty used to it. It's been in place for a while now and certainly allows for better parking and safer parking along Main Avenue, I've noticed as well. So that'll be good. That could potentially start this summer, but we're thinking it could even be next spring.
Right. We'll know more after the next meeting, after they've had a chance to look at all
to
the
be determined.
Options. Yeah, and I think Gabe had mentioned that slowing this project down could compromise the contractors because they've already worked this into their schedule. And we'll have a full discussion in a few weeks.
Okay.
And we can certainly bring this back for closure.
Still moving forward, just a little glitch in financing there and coming back. Probably the next meeting, did you say?
I believe May 14th.
Okay.
Yeah. So it won't be 2 weeks. We've actually got 3 weeks in between this meeting and the next, but it would be our next meeting.
Okay.
So
also, jumping to the regular agenda last night, there was another road project, and there was a bridge report on the Century Avenue Bridge. Mm-hmm. That was a long report.
It was.
Very technical. Mm-hmm.
Very detailed.
Yeah. It kind of went over my head pretty quickly. Do you want to kind of give us the basics and what was the bottom line on the bridge report?
Sure. So the bridge is about 10 years old, and we've known that the bridge, first of all, let me say this, the bridge is absolutely safe. The bridge is safe for motorists. The bridge is safe for everybody to be using. What is happening with the bridge is that the mechanically stabilized embankments, they call them the MSE walls. Those are essentially the bookends on the west edge and the east edge of the bridge span itself.
Mm-hmm.
Those bookends are holding the soil in place to help stabilize the support that helps make the span. What's happening, and it's primarily on the east side of the bridge, is that the soils underneath those mechanically stabilized embankments, the soils aren't necessarily the best, and they're slowly settling. The embankments are settling to the rate of about a quarter inch a year, a quarter to a half an inch a year. So it's not a tremendous amount, but it is enough of an amount for any driver that's transitioning off the bridge back onto the roadway, they notice a bump.
On the east side.
On the east side.
Yeah.
So,
and just to, so I can jump in, I just want to say that we do have a map of that. Maybe we could pop that up, Lloyd. The map of the Century Avenue Bridge. This is the bridge that goes
crosses over Hay Creek and the railroad tracks that are underneath.
And the Prairie Golf Course over there and all of that. So very familiar bridge, very well used.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So on this east side is basically where this problem is happening.
The stabilized embankments are settling down into the ground at a very minor rate. So there's some options going forward. You know, obviously there's the do nothing option, which we're not really interested in that because it will continue to have a problem. There's a maintenance option, which annually we go out and address that little transition, that little bump, and we've been doing that through asphalt and, you know, various lifts of the pavement to help transition that bump. The other option is the really big option, and that's to rebuild the entire thing. And the big number that came along with that price tag, we're not interested in that. So we'll continue to maintain the bridge. We're well aware of the situation. We're monitoring the situation. Again, the public is not at risk. The bridge is totally fine. Continue to use it as you have. Just know that we will keep our eye on this over the next many years as this thing continues to settle into the landscape.
Okay.
And I can't imagine there's too much more to do other than the annual maintenance that we've been doing.
Continue to maintain and monitor the bridge. And the report was basically a heads up.
Right.
Here's what's going on.
Yeah, they've been studying it for almost the last 2 years, just monitoring, through technology and through all the data that they can capture how much it really is moving. And it is such a minor amount that everyone is comfortable leaving it as is and just continue to do what we've been doing.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you for that report.
Sure.
On the report. A big part of last night's discussion and some public testimony had to do with liquor license again.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about it probably in four or five meetings we've been together. This has come about primarily because the Bismarck's liquor license system is a bit antiquated, a bit confusing, and using up all the letters of the alphabet, unfortunately.
The liquor ordinance doesn't always address some of the emerging business trends that are out there. But for this discussion, the biggest sticking point is that the current ordinance, the way it is worded, is that we are tethered to an official census count. So we both know that a census is every 10 years, and we're creeping up on the next census. What's happened since the last census is that this community has grown by at least 12, 13,000 people since 2010. We as the city are not able to respond to that with new liquor licenses because we haven't been part of an official census count. So through a lot of discussions with the, we call them the Class D and the Class E license holders. So a Class D license is what you would expect to see for a liquor store or a bar. A Class E license is typically held by the convenience stores that sell beer or the bars in town that are just beer bars. They just serve beer. Those two licenses are the two that are limited based on population. So what we were talking about with the bar owners and some of the restaurant owners as well is to modify those ordinances to be a little more responsive to the community's needs. The motion that the commission landed on for Tuesday was to direct staff to go back and modify the ordinance. We'll remove the word official census and replace it with estimated census because we do an annual yearly estimated census, and that's based on annexed properties, new subdivisions, building permits. So it's a calculated estimate. We'll be looking at estimated numbers instead of official census numbers. Mm-hmm. And then through the recommendation of a group of bar and liquor store owners, they got together and suggested that the city release one license per year rather than flood the market with four or five or at random. Just release one a year so those that are already operating their businesses have an opportunity to adjust their business models based on new competition.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think this was, again, there was a lot of public testimony last night about that, or Tuesday night, excuse me. And the liquor licenses are a big investment.
They're
a big asset for their for their business, and the city's very sensitive. It would seem that they're not just ignoring that. That's
right.
A huge part of the discussion is how do you make change but not threaten that the existence of that system the way it's always been done.
And we understand that licenses can transfer. I mean, the law allows them to transfer between business owners. So if you want to get out of the business, you can sell your license to the new person and they can start a new business that way. Brand new licenses to the market only come from the city, and it's a one-time purchase where we put it out, it gets bid, and the high bidder gets the license, and they go about their job from there. So for going forward, assuming the ordinance works its way through the system and it's supported and it's passed, it's quite likely that June or July of this year, we may have a license available for purchase.
And that will go out to the highest bidder then through the city.
I shouldn't say just one license. We would likely have a Class D license, which is the full bar and liquor store, and its complement, the Class E license, which is the beer off sale and the beer on sale license.
All right.
So we would have two. The Class D is probably the premier of the two licenses. That's the one that garners the much higher value because of its.
Do I understand that one of the more recent purchases of one of those licenses or transfers or whatever was around 400,000?
That's what we've been told. Yeah, and that was a person-to-person transfer or a person-to-person purchase. The last one the city sold, I believe, was 5 years ago, 2014, and it was in the neighborhood of around $375,000.
Okay. Right in that area again.
They do have a high value. We know that the banks are using these as an asset when they're financing the business as well. So we know there's a dollar amount tied to this, which is why we're very mindful not to unintentionally compromise anybody's ability to be successful.
Well, and I think most of the testimony, whether you saw it in print, they were attached to your agenda. There were a lot of letters in, and the testimony that night, they weren't trying to hinder competition. They understand it's coming, but just do it in a methodical way that doesn't hit them so hard and that there's a plan in place. So will that be at the next commission meeting? You believe this language will come back again?
I believe we will get on it as quickly as possible.
Okay.
So our city attorney, Janelle Combs, will draft some language. We'll share it with the group because we want their input and feedback as well. And then, like all ordinances, it would be introduced at one meeting with the action to call for the hearing. And then the public hearing would be the following meeting. So potentially the 14th and 28th of May would be when we could talk about this next.
All right. And maybe that'll be the last time for a while.
I doubt it. It might be. You never
know. It might be. All these things keep coming back, as mm-hmm. does the next item we want to talk about, and that's the water utility billing rates. Mm-hmm. I think about a year and a half ago started this discussion mm-hmm. about a need for analyzing the usage in the community. Mm-hmm. And it was, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was the impetus for that was new technology at Public mm-hmm. Works and the ability to really get in and dig in to individual water uses right. on individual
hour
properties.
Hour by hour, yeah.
Very interesting,
the,
yeah.
The water analytics system has opened up a whole new opportunity for us to mm-hmm. gather data. I mean, it is such that if your toilet is running and we can recognize through the data, through an alarm system, that you're using more water, there's a spike in your water usage, we can actually get a hold of you and say, you might want to check your faucet, you might want to check your toilet, because we're recognizing you're using a lot more water today than you do most other days. Mm-hmm. But in wow. addition to that data, we are able to determine who's using water, when that water is being used the most, and then also the peak, not just day by day, but then seasonally as well. And I think that was one of the big realizations with the utility rate study, is that clearly there's a peak demand in the summer months when we're watering our lawns, you know, throughout the community.
And it was about a year ago that study was submitted, I mm-hmm. believe.
Right.
And then it was late last year that the rates were finally approved.
I think it was in
forward.
November of yeah. 2018.
So in beginning of the year, mm-hmm. everybody has new residential properties, all had new rates.
Right.
Commercial, I think, kicked in at the same time or a little
February
bit.
February 1st. All the February. Rates changed on February okay. 1st.
But what happened just a week or two ago was a letter was sent to about 7,600
roughly
households
right.
about giving them a bit of a heads up, saying, you are one of the higher users. Mm-hmm. We're heading into peak season. Mm-hmm. Be aware that your rates are going to change. You're right. going to see an adjustment yep. here, and you should be aware of this before we start watering.
Right. If your water consumption habits don't change, your mm-hmm. rates will change significantly. So the letter was intended to, number one, help people be aware that there was a change sure. to the rate structure, but also to encourage more mindful usage of how people are consuming and using treated water.
During peak times.
During peak times. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so August was the month that was looked at last year. It was a very dry month last year. Water consumption was really high, and we recognize that across the board, when you look at apartments, you look at commercial use, you look at manufactured housing usage, and then you look at single-family usage, the single-family homes is really the driver behind the biggest consumption, and the determination is that was primarily through irrigation. When we looked at the statistics of commercial uses and apartment uses, the water rates were very... the water usage was fairly stable because they don't have the lawns to mm-hmm. irrigate the way sure. a single-family home would.
Right.
So the rates have been adjusted. There's a tiered system. The more water you use, the more you will pay. But the message isn't to stop watering your lawns or stop watering your gardens. It's not that at all. We still certainly encourage all of that. It's to be more mindful of when you're watering. So if it's raining outside and your sprinklers are on, you might want to turn off your sprinklers yeah. because that's not the best time to be watering.
Well, and I think there's also another message here, and this is an education component. It could take, it's a long-term solution, is that don't you believe that we need to start rethinking about what we're putting, how we're planting lawns, mm-hmm. and the landscaping that we're doing in this area of the world? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're planting Kentucky bluegrass.
It's an exotic species.
That does not make a lot of sense.
Right.
So we need to, you know, change our way of thinking mm-hmm. about what we should be seeing in yeah. our yards, and it'll save us money, it'll save the city money, mm-hmm. and it certainly will save us time.
Right.
So, I mean, there is an education component, and Michelle Closey, your public works director, your water
utility director.
Did talk about that, and right. that there are some ideas and things on your website, on their website, that people can start looking at.
Right.
Certainly there's been some discussions with some of the landscape operators mm-hmm. and companies in the community that they're aware of that too. And I would assume that they could guide homeowners about mm-hmm. what's best to yeah. plant.
Absolutely. And I think part of the discussion on Tuesday night was also, this is an adjustment for fairness. Because if you look back at homes in older parts of the community, in many ways, one could argue that they have been subsidizing the consumption and the usage of other homes in the community. And mm-hmm. I think there's a responsibility to pay for the water you're using. We all recognize that. But if you're going to be using more, then you should be paying mm-hmm. your fair share of that percentage.
It would seem that that would be a good way to do it. Mm-hmm. You mentioned about 7,600 people mm-hmm. got letters.
That means.
But how many did not?
So in our community, we have about 22,000 parcels. So maybe a third of our community got letters, which means two-thirds of the community did not get a letter, which means their water usage has been within the tier that is determined to be appropriate and averaged. So two-thirds of our community has been using water within a normal rate, and one-third of our community has been using, in some cases, tremendously high volumes of water that are excessive. Through the data, through the analytics, and some of the conversations that have been had with Public Works and community members, we've learned that there are homeowners that were actually putting feet worth of water on their lawn. Studies show that around here, about an inch and a half of water, whether it be rainwater or irrigated water, an inch and a half a week is sufficient to keep your lawn healthy. In one case, there was a homeowner that was putting a couple of feet worth of water on their lawn on a monthly basis. Far too much water. Far too much irrigation. And keep in mind, this is treated drinkable water that's yeah. going on your lawn. So
basically, it's either destroying the lawn, but in that case, I think you told me it was just running off.
At some point, the lawn just becomes mm-hmm. saturated and the water just runs downhill.
There's also a comment during the public testimony about how commercial properties are getting a real break and they're the winners, so to speak. And as I recall, because we've talked about this so many times, after the June presentation of the study, there was it was not approved right away because the commercial property owners came forward and said, wait a minute, we don't understand this. Mm-hmm. We'd like to dig in a little bit more. And right. the city's fine. Yep. Let's take a break. Let's go back to the table with these stakeholders. But they, as I understood, there was a substantial increase to most commercial properties. Mm-hmm. Through that adjustment
right.
and then incorporated in yep. later, again, in November when the whole thing was approved mm-hmm. and moved forward.
Right. Okay. And I think it is fair to mention, too, that the rate adjustment is community-wide. Some of the questions we've had is, what about the park district? What about the school district? Yes, they mm-hmm. will be impacted by this as well because yeah. of the lawns and the parks and everything else that goes into these. So it wasn't just an isolated group of the community. This was border to border throughout Bismarck. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage everybody, if you have questions, please go to our homepage, go to bismarcknd.gov. We've got a section right on the main page that gives you all sorts of information. If you'd like more detailed information or would like to speak to someone about your specific consumption, you can certainly call the Public Works Utilities Department at 355-1700. I believe it's option one on their phone system. And you will get to somebody that knows a lot about this and can help you better understand how to read the data, how to consume water, and how to be a good steward of our mm-hmm. resources.
Mm-hmm. And we have I have a webpage pulled up here, or your webpage, your front page. If people want to know how the process that mm-hmm. this is taken, there are links here on your homepage about the process that went through. The
Many public
schedule.
Meetings, stakeholder meetings, city commission meetings. There's presentations of the data that was shared by the consulting yeah. firm that helped us through this.
There are links to every one of these. You can, again, watch the commission meetings where there was testimony, public input. I think, again, a lot of times we hear, because we watch a lot and listen to a lot of meetings, and it's always surprising to people come to the podium and say, I didn't know anything mm-hmm. about this. This seems to be being railroaded through, or mm-hmm. it's sudden, you're doing this, under the radar. And we see firsthand, basically, all the information that's going out. I realize we sit in a certain situation here where we are privy to mm-hmm. a lot of that, but I did think both cities do a lot with public information.
Yeah, we try really hard to get our message out. But as you heard Commissioner Oban say at the meeting on Tuesday, we can't come and knock on everybody's door. We're all adults, and we have a responsibility to be aware of what's going on in our community. Right. And we try extremely hard to get our message out for all the projects that we're working on. And so for anybody that's listening or watching, I would always encourage you to keep an eye on what the City of Bismarck is doing, whether it be through our homepage, again, bismarcknd.gov, or through social media. We've got a very active presence on Facebook where we're putting out public meetings and announcements and opportunities for feedback and input. That's your chance as a citizen to get engaged and to help us make these decisions as we go forward.
Mm-hmm. And I really need to, at every time we get together, I should be reminding people of how to get into our webpage and watch these meetings, because we archive all of these meetings. About 250 meetings a year go into this library, and you can go in there and watch these meetings whenever you want on your computer. Get in there and watch everything. Park district meetings, school board, city, county. They're there. So we have this tool available at dakotamediaaccess.org. Go to the government access page and you will see all those meetings. So you can get in there and watch them. Yeah. We've been just given a signal that we are really behind in our conversation. So we got to move it up. But a transit development plan.
I'll talk fast.
Okay. Transit development plan came forward last night. We saw the same presentation over in the city of Mandan last week. And basically there was no action taken. It was just basically a heads up to the city. And I shouldn't even say that, because this heads up about this lack of funding or the reserves for funding for public transit has been dwindling down for the last few years.
We've heard this report that unless something is different, transit will start to operate without the necessary funds. And so the last couple of years, the Transit Reserve Fund has been used to infuse their annual budgets to make sure that they continue to operate as they have in the past. So the Transit Development Plan is looking at potential alternatives or potential changes to the system, whether it be a quicker route in and out of Mandan that's more direct, or whether it be changes to some of the fixed route rides, or even potentially changes to paratransit.
Well, and we had public testimony last night at the meeting, and there was concerns about changing, especially the paratransit routes. But no, again, nothing was off the table in the report.
Right.
They talked about every opportunity to save money, but didn't necessarily make recommendations at this point. The first recommendation is to apply for more money, look at additional grant monies that are out there, which came up later in your meeting, and that grant process is moving forward. So that's step number one, and then it will be to look for additional services that could be cut, but that's a ways off.
Right.
People will be informed of that. I think, Lloyd, we have a graphic of that reserve fund, how it has gone down, excuse me, in the last couple of years, that shows that transit monies and how they're changing. I don't know if you can bring that up. Yeah, thank you.
So by 2020, transit, unless something changes in 2020, transit would begin to operate at a deficit level.
Yeah,
the reserves would be gone. So you can see in 2016, there was just over $2 million in reserves. 2017, that dropped by almost $1 million. And it is fair to note that there was a total replacement of the fleet for transit. So both the paratransit fixed route, paratransit and fixed route buses have been replaced, so there was a big chunk of the money used for that. 2018, you can see the reserves are being used again. 2019, there's just a few hundred thousand dollars left, and then 2020, the line drops below zero.
It's definitely shifting, and they're just, again, making us all aware that this is coming, and this concerns both cities of Bismarck, Mandan, and Lincoln, anywhere around us, anybody who's using the system. This other graphic that just came up here really showed the comparisons of the annual operating costs of areas of cities around us of similar size.
Right.
Very interesting how Bismarck Mandan compares.
Bismarck is really the anomaly when you look at what other cities are spending per capita on a fixed route. So just quickly, Rapid City is the lowest with their fixed route system at right around $12 per individual. Bismarck Mandan is closer to $20. Now we're certainly not at the high end of the spectrum, but when you look at paratransit, we are spending more than double per capita on, I'm sorry, more than $25 on paratransit, compared to some cities, which are as low as $12 per capita on a paratransit system.
Well, Fargo-Moorhead is $8.93 for paratransit. So, it's interesting, very interesting to see these numbers. And I think it can be explained again that paratransit is the way transit started in the Bismarck-Mandan area. That's the big difference. Most communities start with a fixed route
and then develop a paratransit system. And for anybody that's not sure, fixed route, what we're talking about there are the big buses that follow the same route day after day. Paratransit is the door-to-door service for people with disabilities that are unable to use fixed route or other means for transportation.
Yeah. Well, real quickly, one of the final items on the regular agenda was a development out east of Bismarck called Clear Sky.
Right.
And that was a long discussion. There was a lot of testimony. It was a public hearing. And it was a big item. It was an annexation. It was a zoning change. It was park
development
approval.
Agreement.
It had a final plat. Mm-hmm. Everything was in there. Every item you could imagine. Mm-hmm. And it's a big development. Potentially...
I think it was 220 some lots on just over 80 acres. And so we're talking about an area just east of 52nd Street between Main Avenue and Apple Creek Road.
Mm-hmm.
So for
south
a lot of people,
Main.
It'd be south of Main and east of the fairgrounds. And this would, as you said, this would be an annexed subdivision, primarily single family homes. There is a park proposed for the area. However, the commission voted to not approve the subdivision. There were some comments from the neighbors about the traffic on Main Avenue.
And I think that's a good distinction. They made a motion not to approve
it
was not denied. So it's probably going to come back in some form.
It could come back again.
Okay.
That would be at the discretion of the developer. He could make some potential changes to respond to some of the neighborhood comments.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the neighborhood to the north, to be fair, is zoned as a rural residential subdivision. So that's an area that you see larger lots, a little more open space,
mm-hmm.
and clearly there are very few neighbors around them other than what's in the subdivision. So the increased traffic, the increased urban density was a concern for them. Of course, there noise and lights and things like that do come along with urban development. So the commission did not vote to approve it. So for now, the project is on hold.
Okay. I think what I heard, too, with public testimony, it was primarily on traffic on Main Avenue.
Main and 52nd Street is tough.
How difficult it is to get out there at peak times of the day.
Yep. And we understand that. The traffic coming into Bismarck from the east is significant. And we also know that Apple Creek Road isn't necessarily the best road in some places, and the county does have to close the road from time to time because of seasonal flooding and the ground conditions underneath the street. So,
and at this point in time, I believe it was Gabe Schell, your engineer, city engineer, said not aware of any road projects that are that are on the books for East Main Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
It continues to build with traffic. So again, I think that was the primary concern that I heard. So, well, we'll just talk about it when it comes back.
Yes,
more than likely it will come back in some form. So. Arbor Day is coming up.
May 3rd.
Just to close up this City Current, Arbor Day, May 3rd. It's a Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have a little tree planting ceremony.
Two trees.
Yeah,
for two guys that that I know very well. Former Community Development Director Carl Hockenstead, who Carl just retired last year.
Yeah.
And then, in some ways, Carl's mentor, Bill Wolken, who was the city administrator. And, of course, he had Carl's job before Carl had the Community Development Director position. So, two trees for two tremendous guys that dedicated over 80 years of their lives to the city of Bismarck. Between the two of them, 40 plus years each. So Friday, May 3rd, JC Park, 1:30 in the afternoon. If anybody's interested, there will be a ceremony. There will be some students there from one of the local elementary schools. The Forestry Division does a great job. They always recognize some of the businesses in town that go above and beyond with their landscaping.
But will Forrest Von Flickertail be present?
I believe the Forestry Division's mascot will be there.
Rumors has it that
I don't know if
Forrest
there's a line forming for autographs just yet, but if anybody wants to come out and have a good time and celebrate a couple of guys that gave a big chunk of their lives to this community, we'd welcome you to be
JC
there.
JC Park, May 3rd, 1:30 p.m. And that's at the corner of 4th and Centennial up in North Bismarck.
On the south side of Century.
Century.
Yep.
Sorry. Yes.
Yep. I think the address is actually 321 East Century Avenue.
Okay.
But it's just east of Washington Street, just west of Forest Street, south side of Century Avenue.
There you go.
It's a great place. It'd be some fun.
You have, we talked about this, and we'll continue to talk about it, I'm sure, for the next few weeks. Strategic plan, you have your call for projects still out.
We do.
Deadline's May 31st,
you
so
got
we got
it.
The next month to work on things.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking for a variety of projects to bring to the city.
It can be a one-day event. It can be a big-scale project that impacts generations for the future. We're very careful not to suggest projects because we don't want to influence people's ideas. But if you have something that you think will better this community, raise the community pride, give us a better sense of place, we want to hear about it.
Yeah. Okay. And it's on your website.
On the website, again, bismarcknd.gov, or feel free to call me. Our office is 355-1300. I'd be happy to help you find the material, answer any questions, walk through it.
Yeah.
Ultimately, this will the projects that we receive will go to the City Commission for their review, and then we'll talk about what's next after that.
So, and how the city can participate in these potential projects.
So appreciate keeping that one on the front burner, because this is a tremendous opportunity for anybody in the community to have an impact on the future.
Mm-hmm. Looking for creative ideas.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Jason. We'll see you
next
time.
Thanks, Mary.
All right.
My pleasure.
And thank you for tuning in to this edition of City Current.
For more information on what was discussed in this episode of City Current, visit bismarcknd.gov or call 701-355-1300. If you have suggestions, comments, or issues you would like addressed in future episodes, contact us at info@freetv.org. This program airs on Government Access, Channel 2 and 602 in HD, or on Radio Access 102.5 FM. It's also available as a podcast on radioaccess.org and as a video viewing link at freetv.org. Thanks for tuning in to this edition of City Current.